Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The biggest convention of its kind ever in the UK, Wrestling MediaCon 2018, is heading to Manchester on the 8th and 9th of September. Wrestling MediaCon 2018 will feature live wrestling shows from Revolution Pro and Impact Wrestling, meet and greet with all the talent, panel discussions from the likes of Inside the Ropes, and workshops on how to get into the world of professional wrestling from former WWE writers and bookers. There will also be guest matches from Defiant, NGW, and an NWA Worlds title defense by Nick Aldis, taped for 10 pounds of gold. Other names announced for Wrestling MediaCon 2018 include The Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer, Colt Cabana, Sean Waltman, Cultaholic, Botchamania, myself and Ollie from The Wrestle Ramble, and many more to be announced. Wrestling MediaCon comes to the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England on the 8th and 9th of September. Tickets are available now from WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, SWAT Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you? How was comedy?
Comedy was funny. Who would have thunk it?
Well, yeah.
It was also very Arsenal-focused. Arsenal is a soccer team for those people in the States. And
around the world.
And a lot of the jokes went over my head. But, you know, like in The Simpsons, or Family Guy, when they make pop culture references to stuff I don't know because I'm not in America and I don't know the minutiae of C and D list celebrities, you can kind of work out the joke for yourself. Like, oh, okay, that person isn't very fast at football. Mm-hmm. He's not very quick at running. They have made a joke about someone not being quick. I'm going to laugh along with everyone else as if I know the target of the joke.
I get jokes.
But it was good. Rob Beckett is very funny. And
does he look like he's in the wrong ratio in real life?
Yeah, but that's it's a mean thing to say. After I said that, I thought, what a mean thing to say. I won't. Although that is a very funny description of someone, and I'm very proud of it, I'm also quite ashamed.
Okay.
So I won't say that anymore. But he was very, very funny. And he struck gold with someone on the front row who had weirdly... It was a guy called Tom, and he'd weirdly come with his mum and four of his mum's friends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gatecrashing their party.
And, he was the only one who worked at Arsenal because it was like a staff thing and friends and family were allowed to come. That's why I was there for my sister. And, he just decided to bring his mum and four of his mum's friends. And he, like, this Rob Beckett just roasted him effectively for all his act. He stopped doing his... You could tell what were his jokes and what were just things he was coming up with on the spot. And yeah, he just abandoned his normal set and just ripped this guy and his five mums. It was hilarious.
In a very, you know, joker, light-hearted way.
Yes, it was always very funny. Like, oh, I bet it's going to be a crazy train back to Maidstone because that's where they were from.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make sure he got some gin in. Who's the crier? Some stuff. It was very good.
And, it's better when you're there.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I I shouldn't have even brought it up. I should have just said, yeah, it was funny.
Yeah.
Move on. How was your D&D? But I didn't. I tried to recapture the magic of a you had to be there thing.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be as good as telling a comedian's jokes.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy has a whole thing about that in Delirious, about how people often come to his shows and then they go home and tell their friends and ruin all of his jokes.
It was weird how many... So there were five comedians overall. I heard some iteration of, when you're a comedian and people ask you what you do and you say, I'm a comedian, and they say, tell me a joke. That observation was made about three times by different people.
Mate, it's almost like you
they're watching the same show.
You need like an agent backstage. Yes. So you're like, don't do the same spots.
I'm really fascinated by the world of stand-up comedy. And I reckon it is. There's so many similarities between that and professional wrestling. The way like everyone watches each other's sets and they're all trying to help each other. Like I mean, not big stand-up comedy, but sort of independent stand-up comedy. But I reckon it's really similar to indie shows in wrestling. And that's why you get some level of crossover with the Colt Cabanas and the Dolph Ziggler's. The performance aspect to it. The idea of dying... And, you know, the crowd not being on it. It's all about crowd manipulation. Yeah, really fascinating.
Good stuff, man. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you. How was your D&D?
D&D was good. Another good, strong session. We're coming to the end of a particular chapter within this campaign at the moment. So we fought some giant worm creatures.
Nice.
That had risen up from, like, a pit of dead animals. That was quite a cool thing. And at that point, the party sort of split off a little bit. There was three of us in one area, and then two of us had gone to this other area, where they got attacked by a gelatinous cube. Which was terrifying, because it nearly killed him, to be honest. And it killed our dragonkin.
Do you ever... Like, once you've done a particularly intense sesh, do you find any of the effects in the story affect you in real life?
How do you mean?
Like, if you were to get attacked on the arm by a skeleton creature in Dungeons & Dragons, and the next day you're like, oh, my forearm hurts quite bad.
Like a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No, I've yet to encounter that.
You're only a relative newcomer, aren't you? Only a couple of months.
No, I mean, I'm only level 4.
Yeah.
You know, I could go either way yet. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But it's good. It was a really, really fun session. Ready Player One.
We've got to talk about that. Yes, we save that for the outro.
We're going to save that for the outro. But before we do get into the show, which, by the way, I'm just going to apologise for now. I don't think I had a pretty great show today.
I thought you had a sterling show.
No, I don't think I had a great show today. I think I liked SmackDown more than... I think I liked it more than I thought I did.
Mm.
And actually, I'm even thinking about going and re-recording the ending of the review. Like, I almost feel like I've gone too high.
You have gone too high.
Yeah.
I don't know why you don't... It seems like you watch the show and then you're like, boom, that's my thoughts.
Yeah.
And then you record it. Whereas I stew on my thoughts and see what everyone else thought and go, actually, they've got a point there.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Well, I don't want to... I did the same thing when I used to write film reviews. I don't want too many people influencing what I've thought. I want to try and just put what my thoughts are out there. But then when I do have conversations with people, like, no, actually, yeah, I didn't think of that bit. I didn't really see that bit. And then I look at my score and I'm like, that was completely wrong, that.
Mm. Well, I know how dumb I am. So I've missed so many parts and nuances too many times for me to not just double check a few other reviews first.
Yes. But anyway, before we get into the show, we said yesterday, hey, there are people who listen to the show that only listen to the intro and outro. They need a name as well, because pod swafters is a term if you are someone who only listens to the podcast version of the show and doesn't watch the YouTube version of the show at all. You just listen to podcasts. So... Mm. These are people who are coming from YouTube just to listen to the intro and outro. We've had four suggestions, one of which I think is absolutely golden.
I'm wicked. Let's hear them.
So first off, we've got one from Dan, who has suggested the PodTuber Nation.
Right.
Which solid. Works.
Mayor of Painesville, Dan.
Mayor of Painesville,
well,
Dan.
Well, it's going to be the worst of all the suggestions. poor Dan's gimmick is having pretty good suggestions, but then being annihilated by everyone else's, who have just like... Just gone crazy.
Yeah. If it's not like submitting a really good version of the Pinky and the Brain, but then someone submits an even more brilliant version. Sean Brown has suggested Ramblers. Jason Downey suggested Ramblecastees. But I'm going to say it's Adilsar, but it's all in caps. So I'm going to say Adilsar. But I'm going to say Adilsar.
All in caps like Kenta or the occasional Kushida.
Yes.
The occasional Japanese
a bit like
wrestler
that.
Name.
But then his surname is in lowercase. So I'm going to say
stylized.
It's Adil Sar has said Swafter Nation, as in after, so it's the...
Swafter Nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was like, and then you can just adapt that to be the after Swafter Nation. Or after Swafters.
Oh, that's killing my accent, that is. After Swafter Nation, I want to say. After Swafter.
Yeah, after Swafters.
Garage. Garage.
That's a garage, mate.
Grass, graph.
And a bath.
That's cool. That's cool. Yes. But I want to rename Dan as the always the bridesmaid of Painesville now. That's good. Yeah, okay. So those people are called...
After Swafters.
I can't even get it out. After Swafter.
After Swafters.
After Swafters.
So, but yeah, let's get on with the show.
To be honest, we struggled with a title and subject for this episode because, in my opinion, not much happened on SmackDown. But, you know, it is quite timely if Rusev wins because, of course, WrestleMania 34 falls on Rusev Day this year.
It's Rusev Mania.
Rusev
Day Mania. So, yeah, we got Rusev versus Jinder on this episode of SmackDown Live. Rusev was added into the United States Championship match last week. And as I mentioned in my SmackDown Live review, like you, I thought there wasn't a whole lot that happened on the show. Although I very much enjoyed it. There wasn't a whole... It wasn't a jaw-dropping or, like, very newsworthy show. But I very much enjoyed it on the whole. Perhaps my expectations were set quite low after last week. But Rusev was added in, and we decided that we would go with this storyline. Because I thought... Well, this story for the news episode, for this video... I'm losing all my words today.
Yeah, where have they gone? They're on the floor.
They're on the floor. You wouldn't believe I'm a published author. But, I found that one of the most telling signs about this whole feud is after the match, you had, like, Randy Orton came in and he hit his RKO from out of effing nowhere, and then Aiden English got pushed off the top rope into an RKO, and then they stood with Bobby Roode and Randy, sort of like with Bobby tensely handing over the belts and holding on to it for just a little bit too long. And the crowd were chanting for Rusev Day.
Yes.
And I thought, wow, WWE are really pushing like these two as like, man, this is what this feud is all about. It's all about Randy Orton versus Bobby Roode. But the crowd were chanting for Rusev Day.
Yeah, so you've got... I mean, that's, I guess, from a management perspective, who you want to get over. It's Bobby Roode and Randy Orton. You're, you know, the wrestler built from a ground up, looks great, Randy Orton. You've got the second coming of Triple H, almost in although they're only like... 7 years apart in age.
Yes, they're not much younger than
in Bobby Roode, and that's who you want, I guess. From on paper perspective, these would be great. But Rusev has gotten over organically, like you said. The crowd are chanting him. He is the most over of any of the guys here. And before last week, before Rusev was added to the United States title match, I negative cared. I gave the old negative F words that Daniel Bryan used to give. I was uninterested in the match to the extent where I would, you know, I would probably skip it if I didn't have to write a review of it. But as soon as Rusev was added, boom, now I'm interested. And the reported reason was because he sold loads of merchandise, right?
Yes, that's the story, is that he... Because the Rusev Day t-shirt is one of the biggest sellers on the website, and the Happy Rusev Day calendar was a massive seller as well. Apparently, what I read was that they ordered a really small number because they thought, this is a silly gimmick that isn't really getting over, it won't sell. And then they sold out extremely quickly, much quicker than they expected. And apparently, from what I've read online... The actual quality of the calendar is very poor.
Oh, really?
Because it's a doofy calendar that only a small group of people were going to buy because it's a doofy thing to buy. And then they sold out and they're like, oh, now people have bought a really crappy product.
It's such a good concept. You've got Rusev Day. The joke is that Rusev Day's on every day. And then someone goes, calendar? That makes perfect sense. And in my head, like, why didn't everyone think of this immediately? And it's such a good concept. I think people just go, yeah, I'm going to buy it. They don't even think about the practicality or potential annoyance or how hideous it might look on a wall. They're just, yeah, I'm gonna buy that. Because of the strength of the idea.
Well, and WWE look at these sorts of metrics. This is tends to be how they judge people being over. Roman Reigns, that in their minds, is one of the most over people, if not the most over person they have in their company, because he sells the most merchandise. John Cena sells the most merchandise. CM Punk, for a long time, sold the most merchandise, but they wanted to pretend that wasn't happening. They wanted to say that Rey Mysterio was selling the most merchandise instead. Now that Rusev is selling the most merchandise, it's a physical thing that you can look at and be like, oh, right, people are into Rusev. People are behind this Rusev Day gimmick. Let's actually do something with it.
But like you said, with the CM Punk thing, of course, that's one of the many reasons John Cena's never turned heel, because WWE makes so much money off t-shirt sales and whatnot from him. They don't want to harm his appeal with the children fan base, because that's where the bulk of the sales come from. But it's a metric that WWE definitely look at until they don't. Which is what it is with CM Punk. Like, those figures were inarguably there. CM Punk was hugely popular and making a ton of money from his t-shirts. Mainly from me. I bought every t-shirt that came out with any of his likeness on. I even had the ice cream t-shirt, which was off one small promo line. Yeah, I even had that. And I've seen a lot of... I thought I was a unique snowflake. I've seen many people at wrestling shows since then with that same t-shirt while I've been wearing that t-shirt.
Mm.
And I don't feel special anymore. But WWE never really fully got behind Punk in that way, as they would do a John Cena or a Roman Reigns.
Apart from giving him that over a year-long title run.
Yes, but that wasn't because of him, it was more from The Rock.
It wasn't like he was main eventing every show. It was off the back of the t-shirt sales they gave him that thing, but that whole title run was just for The Rock. Like, they wanted to create this really long title run so The Rock could win it. You are right, and he
did. But he hardly main evented any pay-per-views. It was all John Laurinaitis and John Cena.
I was going to say, John Cena's the start, mate.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
So it was a very empty getting behind him. So what I'm trying to say is, even though those sales figures are there, even though the crowd reaction is there, Rusev isn't their guy. So I'm worried that the right thing to do by a country mile is give Rusev the title, is give him the win. You can protect who you want to protect, because it's a four-person match here. And it doesn't harm anyone. And it gives everyone a great feeling.
Yeah, well, Dave Meltzer said this. I can't remember which pay-per-view it was now. When Rusev Day were in the tag team, there was like a four-way tag team match thing.
Yeah.
And Dave Meltzer was like, if I was in charge, I'd have just called an audible and given the belts to Rusev Day, because they were the most over people in their match. And it's such an over channel. It's the sort of thing you want to get behind, strap a rocket to, and do something with, as opposed to just like ignoring it, pretending it's not happening. I really do think that Rusev should be winning at WrestleMania 34. Mm. It's the win that makes the most sense. But I don't think he is.
Really?
I don't think he's winning the belt at Mania. I think that they are more focused on this Randy Orton, Bobby Roode feud. Mm. That will continue on, in towards the summer.
Rude feud.
Exactly.
We'll save our predictions, our actual predictions, for Friday's WrestleMania prediction show, where we'll be going up against Brian Zane. So we'll say our own individual predictions for fun to play along at home with, but then we'll have to work together to compromise to halfway happy on a unified prediction.
Okay.
Yeah,
to go against Zane.
It's just a shame. It's like every match that Rusev is added to at the moment, which has a title attached to it, I'm like, they should just give him the title. I'm not usually like, I'd like to see long drawn out title chases, especially if someone's going to organically get over. But Rusev's already organically over. So, like, in the Bobby Roode match a couple of weeks ago for the United States title, we were both saying, just let Rusev win, or let Bobby Roode turn heel and you play out that dynamic. But Randy Orton hasn't got a match. Maybe Randy will win it back.
Randy's the champion.
Oh, my God, I don't care about anything in this feud apart from Rusev. That is enough reason. Anyway, the actual match itself, very funny at the start.
Yes.
Sunil Singh comes out, sings horribly.
Yeah, always great to have a horrible singer try and then act like they can sing.
Yeah, and they got the the spotlight. It was the full Aiden English Rusev Day entrance works for Jinder. And that was the first time we've seen... This was the most babyface Rusev has ever been presented.
Yes.
Because he's going up against an out-and-out heel in Jinder. And because that Sunil Singh rendition at the start of Jinder's music was so bad, the pop Aiden English got for Rusev Day.
Yep, and he came out, did a little bit of a rap, and then introduced us into Rusev Day. And I mean, I've always said, Rusev has one of my favourite themes in WWE anyway, because it's just... Dun. I love it. It fits him perfectly, and he comes out and he does his big, like, jump and go, rah! He just makes me smile.
Yes.
I love Rusev. I've always loved Rusev. I just think he's ace.
And I wrote down here, because when he did the rah, and Aiden English sort of did a... When, as soon as he hit the floor, Aiden English pivoted up and did an extravagant hand gesture. Like a, I guess, like a... What would you call that? Like a flamboyant acting West End thing.
There you go.
And I thought, in a million years... Who would have thought this would work?
Exactly right.
I would never have put those two together.
That's what I was going to say. Like, this, like, I've always loved Rusev. I always thought Rusev was a really good act, and he was such a great act with Lana. And then they took Lana away from him, and I was like, no, I know, you're starting to get a bit cold on Rusev, and no one's really getting behind him. And then you're like, all the while, I'm just like, just put Lana back with Rusev. Yes. Like, that makes the most sense. But actually, this over here makes the most sense. This happy little accident.
No, it makes no sense.
Well, not working,
but it's working.
Okay, but it makes the most sense to keep them together because it's a happy little accident of just like, oh, we'll have Aiden English sing for Rusev because he was given the keys to Bulgaria, or Plovdiv. And then, yeah, let's just keep them together. And they're such a great unit. It just works perfectly.
An ultra unit.
Well, they're not quite the ultra unit.
It's like you look at Rusev's character, Bulgarian brute. He taps people out with the accolade. What does this guy need? A Shakespearean-style singer.
The Shakespeare of song, man. Yeah. He just comes out with his little glasses, looking like a proper douchebag, and he just sings a song, and it's wonderful.
I think putting Lana with them could send this into the stratosphere.
Oh, well, the problem is, Lana has already sent someone into the stratosphere, and that's Tamina, because she's currently on a mission to try and find a renewable energy source.
Yeah.
And
what a sacrifice.
What a sacrifice she has made for all of us. So you can't really put Lana with her now. She's got too much. She's got too many other things in her mind.
The Wrestle Ramble will be right back after these short messages. This podcast is brought to you in part by Patreon. For just $5 a month, you'll get access to the Wrestle Ramble Extra, a monthly podcast where Ollie and I review shows from wrestling's past. If you pledge now, you'll get our back catalogue of episodes, including Money in the Bank 2011, Armageddon 2000, Wrestle Kingdom 10, and No Way Out 2004, and many others, as well as this month's episode, which will be WrestleMania 25. And $10 plus backers will become part of the Ramble Club, our new show where we talk about wrestling from around the world, including reviews of the Golden Lovers versus Cody and Marty Scurll, Austin Aries versus Eli Drake, and many, many more. All that and so much extra, so head over to patreon.com/wrestletalk for more information.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's a SmackDown review, Maggle. I love it. We got us a flying Uso.
Shane McMahon's back, and he's going to let you know he's back by saying the name of the host city and doing a little shuffle dance. Oh, wait, I've got to sell my hernia. I'm going to grab my abdomen for a bit. I'm going to shuffle around again. What up? Enter host city here. I didn't miss him. I forget. Like, because Daniel Bryan, this is Shane McMahon's been off for about 3 weeks.
Two weeks.
He missed two episodes, but 3 weeks in total. And Daniel Bryan has just been killing it with promos and emotion. And I thought, man, I can't wait for Shane McMahon to come back and these two to be a team. And then Shane McMahon did come back and I was like, oh, no, this has actually exposed McMahon even more.
Well, I'll tell you what exposed McMahon even more. As you said there, Daniel Bryan has been killing it with promo since his comeback promo where he announced that he was cleared to wrestle. He had a great promo last week as well. And then this week, they're having this banter back and forth. Shane McMahon comes out and then like Daniel Bryan says his bit. Shane McMahon says his bit. And then forgets the bit that was meant to come next.
Mm.
Now, I think what was meant to come next was him saying, I want to shake your hand.
Yes.
And that would then lead to Daniel Bryan saying, like, no, man. Like, I've learned in the 6 years I've been here that you hug it out. Which, you know, is fine. It's a nice little friendly dynamic. Daniel Bryan clearly saw that Shane had forgotten his lines. Was like, cool, I know how to save this segment. I'm just going to jump to the next bit and say, like, we're going to hug it out. Shane McMahon, like a total div, then was like, handshake. And
yeah,
like, and then Daniel Bryan's like, oh,
a malfunction. Last line, restore.
And Daniel Bryan's like, no, we hug now.
Yeah,
like, we do the hug now. No, it just made the ending of this feel really awkward.
Yeah, Bryan goes, we've already shook hands, man. Let's hug it out. Hug it out. Please, crowd,
let's
help
try
us
and
here.
Save this.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this bit up because Shane McMahon just Bryan says his bit. And then Shane McMahon just looks down, and I swear, he just picks at the microphone top.
Oh crap. No. And then it's a bit like, when he realised, Daniel Bryan started and was like, you could see Shane was like, I just remember what the line is. Oh, I just remembered what it is.
But I'm not going to work it in naturally. I'm just going to say
it.
As soon as he's finished saying, talking, I'm going to do it.
Handshake.
Mm.
Oh, man, it was...
Yeah.
Quite embarrassing. It's great to have Shane back, though, for getting lines. You know, him and Kurt on the same show, just the pair of them in the ring, just forgetting lines all the time, looking at the other one with that deer in the headlights being like, do you know what's next?
Yeah, it's just, like, I'm obviously glad he's
fine.
Well, you know, how healthy is he?
Well,
like this,
WWE have a very strict medical assessment, unless you're a McMahon, and you know they're going to be
really part-timer,
or they're going to really scrutinise you unless you're a McMahon, and they, you know, make sure that you're absolutely fine.
It's just from everything that came out and everything the Wrestling Observer has said about Shane's condition and the hernia and the diverticulitis. Thank you. I'll just let you say it
because I said whenever. It so right. I said it so right in the news video.
That's serious by itself. But okay, you can try and push through it. But add the hernia to it. That makes it quite dangerous. So, well done, Shane. Well, do I even want to say well done? Because I think it's probably quite rash to go into the ring. But I don't know the extent of the guy's injuries. But
yeah.
That aside, he's not good still. So
yeah, although... The only other thing I really wanted to say about this segment is F those people that started to what Daniel Bryan.
Yes, what the hell, guys?
What the hell, guys? Like, who what's Daniel Bryan? Mm. Come on, man. Like, what's wrong with people?
They died out eventually.
It was just like five guys.
No, that was loud.
But that's because it then started to spread because people, it's a Pavlovian response. You hear the watch out, you then just join in, as you've often said.
It's you don't start a chant. It's the people that
it's the next people. It's yeah. it's the third and fourth person who chants the chant who really starts the chant.
Yeah.
When so the tipping point begins.
So unfortunately, it did, and then that, I think that's what threw Shane off in forgetting his lines. I mean, I'm not trying to say that the fans are at fault for Shane forgetting his lines, because Shane's quite bad at this anyway and was going to forget his lines regardless. But I don't think that helped.
It's just it's not only that he's forgetting his lines. It's just how wooden and charisma-less he is sometimes.
He can't improvise.
Yeah. But I enjoyed the hug it out spot.
I thought that was cute.
I thought it was a really nice reference, but because I didn't see it coming, weirdly, and it should have. I also wasn't a fan of them just kind of skirting over all the tension stuff. So this is about 5 months of storyline and slow build development. And to be honest, it was boring slow build development, I thought, for the majority of it. But hey, if we get a payoff, that's cool. But we didn't get a payoff. We just got a, that's by the by now, because I've been medically cleared. So it's kind of lazy rewriting this story.
I feel that this was a 5 months worth storyline that they were like, and the end of it was, we're going to have this tag team match at WrestleMania. But for the 4 months and 3 weeks, they all say like 4 months of that build, they were like, we need to get Daniel Bryan cleared. And they couldn't get him cleared. And now here we are 2 weeks out before WrestleMania. We finally get him cleared. It was like, right, we've got to wrap this up quickly, because we've got to. So all of that stuff, that like long delay, all this stuff here just feels like it should have been moved upwards, and we could have spread this out over a better 5 month period. Because they did a promo package for this. They did a video promo package to hype up this match. And I was watching it, I was like, wow, they made this storyline feel really coherent, because this storyline has not been coherent whatsoever, but they've really made this look like it's been one really easy to follow storyline. They just cut out all of the nonsense. They cut out all the stuff of Kevin and Sammy turning on each other. They just cut out all of the naff bits of the story and just kept it to its simplest form. And I feel like that's what they always intended to do, but just couldn't get that clearance for Daniel Bryan, and then couldn't do the, they couldn't do the payoff they wanted until 2 weeks before WrestleMania.
Yeah, the video packages editing skills are just well done.
Yeah,
you even make these feuds look really good and punchy.
Mm-hmm.
But the yeah, I just thought you could do it better, WWE.
Oh,
you've got a huge staff of writers. Surely someone could write that out better. You know, just sort of write around it or do an angle or something. But whatever.
There are two just do it better moments I had on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll come to them. We'll come to them. But I had two of them.
So this transitioned, and it's a SmackDown thing that originally I was kind of a fan of, because it's like, ooh, people are just coming out. It's a really fast pace to the show. Don't know what's going to happen. It makes it a bit more chaotic. Now it's just a bit weird, because Charlotte's music hits at the end of this, and then that's her going into the match.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it worked here. It's just when it seems like there's going to be a run-in, Charlotte was going to add herself to the tag match at Mania.
I think they do it because they then go into an ad break. So it's just like, oh, stick around.
Yeah.
Because Charlotte's got a match. Rather than doing like the coming up next, you actually get to see part of the entrance, and then they go to an ad break. I guess that's the theory behind it. But you're right. I think it just makes everything seem mad awkward. It just seems like the show's not timed out properly.
I think this time worked. But it, with the previous weeks, it has in the overall attempt at this style, it's not working, because sometimes it looks like they're going to run in. But I think they're doing the, I like that way of, oh look, we're going to have a match now, come back after the break. I prefer that to the ad break being in the match, which happened a lot on this show,
didn't it? Just as well as at their own adverts to hype WrestleMania.
Yeah. So Charlotte versus Natalia, we had an ad break. Then we had the shrink screen, so the match kept on going on with a WrestleMania ad in the top right, and then come back for about a minute, then another normal ad break. It was, and this happened quite a few times throughout the show, it was overkill on adverts. Yeah. By a long way.
But I thought this was a decent little match. It was meant to happen last week, but Charlotte had a dentist appointment. I feel like I'm going to have to go to the dentist again soon. You know?
What for?
Yeah, my tooth up on this side. Like, I've got a checkup soon, so I'll ask them. But man, it's been really bugging me for the last couple of days.
Oh,
so it's the exact same place, just on the other side.
With the root canal again.
Well, yeah, I might have to. I don't really want to have root canal again, because that was bloody disastrous, but could possibly be. Anyway, so this, I thought this was a decent little match. But in particular, Natty locking in the bow and arrow lock.
and Charlotte then standing up out of it, which I thought was a really, really cool spot.
Didn't she, into the corner.
I thought it was a really nice spot. But eventually they do a double down, and then Carmella runs down with the Money in the Bank briefcase to try and cash in again. Crowd pops for the potential cash in. Charlotte just boots it out of her hand, and it just goes flying into the fifth row.
Punts it.
Absolutely punts. Like Randy Orton in 2009. And so there was no cash in there. And then they did a follow-up to, or a callback to their previous match, where Natty tried to roll her up off the distraction. Charlotte kicked out. Figure eight. She won. I thought it was a decent little match. But for me, this pretty much confirms that Carmella is cashing in on whoever is the Raw Women's Champion.
Oh, so not Asuka.
Yeah.
So
I think I think that's the storyline they're telling, is that she can't cash in on SmackDown, so she's just going to go and do it on Raw instead.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know what Carmella's thinking here. But like, she needs to pick her spots to cash in better.
She's very bad at picking her spots.
So this was off the back of, I mean, the match had only gone about 10 minutes. Charlotte does a moonsault. A really impressive moonsault. Natalya gets the knees up. They're both down. That's when Carmella decides to run down.
Not only that, but if she cashes in her Money in the Bank, she's inserting herself into three ways, as opposed to waiting until her match is finished and making it a one-on-one match. She's very, very silly with this. Like, you know, credit where credit's due, she might win the belt, but I mean, she's playing with fire at the moment.
So, as you accurately predicted yesterday, Asuka did turn up next.
Yeah, I've seen a few people say that this wasn't great.
It wasn't great.
I mean, it wasn't. I said that what I wanted was a really good go home angle for Asuka, because the last thing we saw of her was being beaten down by Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. We didn't really get much of that here. Like, I think someone said, like, all she needs to do is just kick Natalya. And just like knock Natalya, like Natalya tries to attack, and then Asuka just knocks her out, and that's the closing thing. Because Asuka's ending moments on both Raw and SmackDown were being beaten up by Alexa Bliss and Mickie James, and having her promo interrupted by Charlotte.
I would have had Carmella run down at a more opportune moment, maybe, because Charlotte and Natalya are more than capable and having a very good match, and like an exhausting match for them. You sell that Charlotte's really beaten up afterwards. Maybe Natalya hits her with a chair out of jealousy. Charlotte's down. Carmella runs in. That's a more believable cash-in spot. But Asuka takes out Carmella.
Oh, man. Well, that's much better, yeah.
Because then, like, you know, Asuka wants to face Charlotte for the belt, and then should be having to face Carmella. It makes a lot more sense, and it's a lot more dramatically engaging. This was just Asuka came down. Charlotte's like, okay, here we go. Gonna have some promo. And Asuka says, the queen will bow down to the Empress of Tomorrow. Asuka's delivery was great. But then Charlotte grabs the mic and said, I'm ready. But the real question is Asuka ready? Of course, a play on no one's ready for Asuka, but not a good enough play to be the go-home line.
Yeah.
The WrestleMania match. And then they both just looked awkwardly at each other and kind of looked at the title sign. And then that was it.
This is a feud ruined by a pointless pay-per-view called Fastlane. If Fastlane,
that's the problem.
If Fastlane hadn't existed, if Fastlane wasn't there, then we would have just been able to build this since the Rumble. But because we had to wait until Fastlane was done, then we could start building this feud.
You still had 4 weeks. I mean, like, what more would you have if you had 8 weeks? You'd just have them come out and stare at each other more.
You could have done a lot more than they have done. That's my point.
You could have done more in the 4 weeks.
You could have done anything in these 4 weeks. What I'm saying is that this, like, because all we've had for the first third of this year, is a feud between Asuka and Alexa Bliss that wasn't going anywhere. We just had all this stuff on Raw, and Charlotte kind of messing around on SmackDown with Ruby Riott and the Riott Squad. So, like, all of this stuff has just been for nout. And then all of a sudden, Fastlane happens, like, right, now we need to start building towards this feud. Oh, also over here, we need to start building this feud now as well. If you didn't have Fastlane there, this wouldn't have been an issue.
I disagree, because I don't think time's the issue here. I think it's what they've done with the time. I think all the angles they've done in the... I wouldn't want to have more of what they've done.
No, but you could have... I think with more time, you could have done more with it.
And the other argument is the John Cena Undertaker thing. But they couldn't really do that until after Fastlane. But they've done really well. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you could say, so is this with Charlotte. Will Charlotte be able to face Asuka? Because she has to overcome the fierce Riott Squad. That's technically part of the story. I just think that they've tried to base the and similar to AJ Nakamura, which has kind of shifted up a gear, but they've just based on Charlotte and Asuka being this dream match, and that's all it's going to be sold on. But I don't feel as into it.
I agree. I mean, as I wrote my notes and I said in the review, this had less heat than you think it would do.
Yeah.
Because this is meant to be billed as some sort of dream match. It's the first time they've had a match in WWE, I think. I don't think they had one in NXT either. And it doesn't really feel like that big of a deal.
No.
I don't think it's helped that they just... Well, I don't know why they just didn't move Asuka over to SmackDown.
Yeah, so that was a rubbish go-home angle, I've put. Then we had an AJ Styles sit-down interview, which was pretty nice. I liked the presentation of that. And he said how he was patted on the head like a dog last week by Shinsuke Nakamura. But this dog bites. And he's emotional, but he'll beat Shinsuke. It was good.
It was good. He did say this. He goes, "We are far away from the Tokyo Dome. This is WrestleMania." Which I thought was a nice little WWE dig at Wrestle Kingdom.
And Daniel Bryan then had a video package, which was great.
Yep.
Jinder Mahal versus Rusev. We've already talked about that. Again, but not a good go-home angle. It's because we didn't really talk about it. We talked more about Rusev. It's Randy Orton and Bobby Roode facing off against each other. And then they just look at the sign. That was it.
I mean, I've got to be honest with you. I mean, maybe I'm being overly positive on this show, which would be a change, I guess. But it did get me into the match. Like, I'm looking forward to this match on Sunday.
The Rusev win did, yeah.
Not even just the Rusev win. Just like everyone, like the Randy Orton RKO out of nowhere, Bobby handing over the title. I don't know, man. I'm into it.
The RKO from out of nowhere was good, yes. But, oh, man. Yeah, I didn't think it was a good go-home angle.
I didn't say it was a good go-home angle, but sure. It did get me into it.
Then we had a Nakamura interview. Really good performance from Shinsuke.
Yeah, just do it in Japanese, though.
I didn't mind this.
I just think it's so much better when you just do it in your native tongue and you're not trying to work around a language that's not your own. I just think it works so much better that way.
What about a mix of both worlds where he'd start off fiery and Japanesey and then just do the last bit in,
that also,
in English?
That absolutely also works, yeah. That was my first, just do it better, WWE.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, I think what you did there was great. Sit-down interviews, awesome. But just the fact that, like, just do it in Japanese. Like, it's such a simple fix to a situation. Just do it in Japanese.
That's the one you had issue with, not the Asuka Charlotte stuff.
No, that wasn't one of my... No. We're actually going to come on to my second just do it better.
Oh, I know what it is.
Man.
But Nakamura then goes on to continue to build this AJ's too emotional storyline and saying he's going to make a mistake there and he'll capitalise. So, yes. Well, do you want to take this part then?
Right, okay. So... The best thing on SmackDown Live in 2018 has been this three-way feud between the Usos, New Day, and the Bludgeon Brothers. It's been awesome. I've loved all of the build of this. I've loved the Bludgeon Brothers just coming down for matches, interrupting people, not actually acknowledging them. They're kind of like pushing themselves away. Then the beatdown they did at Fastlane, the dream teams you've had since then, these three teams are going to collide at WrestleMania. And what was their big go-home angle? I mean, you want to piss over Charlotte and Asuka, that's fine. This, mate, is utter dross. This, mate, is absolute pony. This is bollocks. This go-home angle was the New Day shilling the network. And it was the New acting like goofballs, pulling out stuff from their pants and saying, like, here, you can watch the network on this. Then the Usos walk in and say, like, yeah, and if you're going to see us win, like, defend our titles on the network... And then the Bludgeon Brothers awkwardly walk in the back and smash a camera. This was crap.
Yes.
Absolute crap.
It was... So when it started, and they're all... The New Day are very good at making plugs and stuff engaging and not too annoying. I was like, okay, this is fine. This is quite actually a nice novel way to promote the network. That they should probably do this more. Get some of their best, funniest promo guys to do little skits like this and kind of drop it in out of continuity. Like how they used to, I think it was last year or the year before, when they do those little WWE shop segments.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but
yeah.
That's fine. It's quite... I would much prefer that than Michael Cole telling me to... It's free, man! It's free! Please subscribe to the network for WrestleMania. But then when the Usos came in, I was like... No, this isn't good. Stop that. But then when the Bludgeon Brothers walked in behind them, and it was just the way that the New Day and the Usos Scooby-Doo level scampered and ran away and went, oh no, woo. It wasn't like played off like a serious threat. It was played up totally for laughs, and then the Bludgeon Brothers just turn, look at the camera, and Luke Harper swings a hammer, and that cuts the camera to black. Really, really bad.
So I'm wondering now, in hindsight, whether my anger at this segment made me forgive everything else on the show. My absolute hatred of this segment made me go like, maybe that Asuka and Charlotte stuff wasn't so bad. Maybe that United States Championship stuff wasn't that bad.
If this because is your measuring stick, maybe.
I was going to say, if this is just like, this is the bottom, you're like, man, everything else just seems so much better than this. Because this whole feud is meant to feel like a war. And it has previously felt like a war. And then here, it's just become an advert. It's become a commercial for the network. Just a really awkwardly staged WWE advert. It was absolute nonsense. This was dreadful. Mm. This was the worst thing that WWE have done all year.
Wow.
I can't think of anything as a go-home angle for a pay-per-view, considering that, and it's your pay-per-view for WrestleMania, your go-home for WrestleMania, it's one of your best-built feuds that you've been building for so long, and this was your go-home angle. I think it's the worst thing they've done all year.
I would have to go back through my worst stuff WWE's done list for this year.
Have you got one to...
I should do somewhere. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. I'm willing to admit that there is something worse, but man, it has to be a lot worse.
And it's just like, of all the matches or feuds that you're building up for WrestleMania, why do this spot for this feud? Because you've got next up, you've got a throwaway eight-man tag. Well, you could honestly have... Breezango cut a promo in the middle of the ring during the match, no selling stuff, annoying all the old timers, exposing the business. That would be better.
Yeah,
that would be better than doing it for the tag team feud.
Yeah,
but yes, this went on to Baron. I think I've got everyone here. Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler, Primo Cologne made his WWE return.
Primo made TV. Nearly went with that as the headline.
Huge WWE star returns. And Mojo Rawley beat Fandango, Zack Ryder, Tyler Breeze, and Ty Dillinger. So, you know, this was almost the, people are still employed match.
It's the forgotten SmackDown mid-card. So they mentioned on commentary here that the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is a really great way to elevate your career. Look at what Baron Corbin has accomplished since winning. Look what Cesaro has accomplished since winning. Look what the Big Show has accomplished since winning. And then they mentioned that Mojo won the Battle Royal last year with the help of the Gronk. They said that Mojo won it last year, but he's been very upset with management that he hasn't been given any opportunities since then. I think it was either Saxon or Corey Graves made this point. It's like he just felt that he's been like held down by management because he hasn't been getting any opportunities. And Tom Phillips, in almost that Vince McMahon said, was almost as Vince McMahon as just like, well, he'll get another chance this Sunday. And I was like, to what? Not get a push? Like what do you him to win and then not get anything on the back of it? What's the point?
So let's look at these Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal winners. You've had Cesaro, who, to his credit, went on to become a Paul Heyman guy. That didn't work. Then had like a sort of underpushed era. And then has found like success with Sheamus as the Raw Tag Team Champions. Although, you know, that's not how I would use him in a perfect world.
And neither would I. Also, I would say that him being a tag team champion, has gotten out to do with him winning the Battle Royal 4 years previous.
But everyone else, so all the other winners, which are Baron Corbin, Mojo Rawley, and The Big Show twice...
Has Big Show won it twice?
Yes.
Has he really?
Yeah, I think so. And Big Show, maybe I'm wrong.
I think Baron Corbin's trying to, like, he's going to be the
first... He's trying to do it twice.
But I thought he said, I'm going to be the first person to win it twice.
By the by, those three guys, if Big Show comes back, he's either going to be the tag partner of Braun, or he's going to be in this Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. So, that means everyone apart from Cesaro, 75% of the winners... have not progressed their careers any further. They are in exactly the same spot on the WrestleMania card however many years after they win it.
But WWE are very clever in how this, like, Big Show's going to go into the Hall of Fame, you know, and he won the Battle Royal.
Because that's the thing. Yeah, and that's the crowning achievement.
Corbin, he won the Money in the Bank, you know, and he also won the Battle Royal. These things can, you know, they're all connected, really. If you kind of like, if you could point the dots together, it sort of is connected. Saddest moment for me in this match was when Tom Phillips mentioned that it was either 2 years or 3 years to the day that Zack Ryder won the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania.
For a day.
And I was like, oh, God, how sad was that?
Yeah.
Remember when he won? And everyone was like, huh, Zack, eh? We're giving the belt to Zack, are we?
Mm.
And then he lost it a day later, and you're like, oh, okay, that's why we gave it to Zack.
It was to annoy us.
Yeah.
So, that was that match. There's nothing really to say. Baron Corbin pinned Fandango with an end of days. And like you said, he posed with two fingers next to the trophy to insinuate that he's
going
to...
Looks like if you just peeled away, you'd find some delicious chocolate underneath it this year.
It looks ropey, yeah.
Looks proper pants this year.
Maybe it's an Easter egg version.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. Just peel it over slightly. I think if you put that next to a heater, it would melt.
Then we had Benjamin and Gable doing a text promo. Nothing really to add there. Mm-hmm. It's a thing. It's not going away. But then Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, while the commentators were doing a link, ran in. They ran in, they stood on the announcer's table, and they interrupted everything, and they started to cut a promo by grabbing some microphones, and they were just like, we apologise in advance, not to Daniel Bryan, because we don't care about him, he fired us, but we apologise to Brie, because we're going to end his career again. We apologise to Bryan's kid, you know, which felt really real. And this was good stuff. And then when the mic cut out, it was like, ooh. But they cut backstage the Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan looking at the screen. And then like that silent, yeah, let's go. Let's go sort this out. And it bugged me that Shane's music played.
If you want to talk about nitpicking, I mean, yeah, it did annoy me as well.
Yeah, like, it's not like Shane was cheated out of an entrance earlier.
No. We've got Daniel Bryan's music to end.
Yeah, but...
I mean, that is super, super nitpicking. I thought the same thing. I was like, I don't know.
It is super nitpicking.
I wouldn't have played Shane's music. I thought this was actually going to end in some sort of brawl.
Yes, I would have preferred that, actually.
Because, like, Kevin and Sami cut these... Sami was wonderfully annoying.
Yeah, Sami was really good.
So good. And Kevin's, like, guttural screams when he's cutting promos. As I said in the review, I think this added a layer of emotion that has almost been missing from this at times. But the way he cuts promos, it just makes you feel like he genuinely believes what he's saying. He's one of the best promos in the company. And yeah, and when Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon came out, I was like, man, this is where they're going to collide. They're going to have a big polar pass, and that's going to be your big go home angle. But it wasn't, because Kevin and Sami had already left, and Daniel Bryan was like, hey, everyone, take pictures, because this would be the last time you're going to see them on SmackDown Live. Then Shane sang the na-na-na song, and the segment ended, which I thought was a bit of a letdown.
Not just a letdown, but kind of undermining, because Sami and Kevin Owens were so emotional, like you said. But for Shane and Bryan to walk out, two men who have been really badly beaten up by these two guys recently... to come out and kind of treat it like a joke was... what a weak way to send it to the WrestleMania show this weekend.
I agree.
But and I hate that song. I hate the na-na-na-na song. It makes everyone look like a dickhead. Everyone in that audience who's saying... I would never sing it. If I wouldn't get swept up in the mob mentality, I'd just sit there going, oh, dickheads, singing this stupid, obnoxious song. He's sounding like Michael Cole. But, excuse me. Oh, no.
Yeah.
The smell of Michael Cole was trying to stop me from talking. AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura teamed up to take on Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable in another lackluster go-home angle.
Well, I thought this was a decent match that when was actually on screen was really good.
Yeah.
But was sort of undermined by constantly cutting to commercial and being shrunk into the corner so you could play the WrestleMania ad. Like, this stuff doesn't happen on Raw.
Mm.
Like, the Seth Rollins-Finn Balor match...
It did shrink down at one point, but it was so long, you didn't...
God,
I
didn't even remember it. I just remember Miz on commentary and the great match. Like, it felt really... It undermined the match a little bit. And I really enjoyed it when it was on screen. I loved Nakamura and Benjamin working together. I loved Nakamura and Gabe working together. I just love all these four guys. They were doing some really, really great stuff. But I did quite like the angle, actually. I thought the angle at the end was really good, particularly because you've got... AJ, he'd made the hot tag comeback, and he knocked down Chad Gable.
And then he went and he stood literally next to Nakamura to do the phenomenal forearm, which I thought was a really nice touch. Just kind of looking at him the entire time, because Nakamura's been saying it's all knee to face, mate. This is the first time that AJ has had the upper hand going into this feud. And then afterwards, Gable and Benjamin were beating down Nakamura, and he cleared the ring. And AJ went to do the forearm and stopped himself dead in his tracks and then patted him on the head. What I really liked about this was that Nakamura showed his emotion and he got really riled up by it and got really angry. And I thought it was a really nice wrinkle to this feud. I liked how it played off from last week. I thought it was a really solid angle. But as I said in the review, it should have come like 3 or 4 weeks ago and you'd have built up to a bigger and better go home angle. This is like week two of your build as opposed to your final build.
Totally agree. Yeah, you start off this, like if this was a 4 week build to Mania, which is what it is, like that's what they had really after the Fastlane pay-per-view. You have last week's angle where Nakamura pats him on the head, play first, then this week you have the second week you have the Nakamura getting angry one, and that's when it kicks into the second gear, when they're actually really angry and they start to go at it more. Maybe you have a big pull apart brawl in three and then whatever in four. This was like, I totally agree, but Nakamura, it was great to see him look so angry. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like at first when AJ did the phenomenal forearm and stopped. Nakamura was laughing like, "Ha, I see what you're doing here." But it was the pat on the head from AJ. So disrespectful, just like Nakamura did the previous week, that sent Shinsuke furious.
Loved it.
Really enjoyed that.
I really, really liked it.
But overall SmackDown thoughts. You said last week that you rate SmackDown on if you could miss it, and tune in the following week and nothing would have changed.
Mm-hmm.
My argument, because I liked last week's show, you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
My argument was, no, that was a totally you need to see show, because like three matches were confirmed, you had a few angles happen. This one, this was a totally missable show for me.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
What happened that changed WrestleMania, not changed WrestleMania, but really upped the ante for WrestleMania?
No, and you are not wrong. Absolutely, you're not wrong on that. And I think it's interesting that you think it was a really missable show. But I liked the Natty Charlotte match. I liked the main event. I liked the angle with Randy RKOing Rusev out of nowhere. There was like little bits and pieces in the show that I just really liked. And at the end of it, I was like, yeah, that was a decent show. I think in hindsight, I probably rated it far too highly in my review. But I was off the Raw show, which I thought was a decent go-home show. I thought this was a decent go-home show. My bar is so low that because you've just like leaped over it. And the only thing I really hated, I actively hated on this show, was that the New Day backstage segment. Everything else on the show I thought was fine to very good. I thought it was a decent show.
It's a decent week-to-week SmackDown. It's a lackluster go-home show. It's a really missable WrestleMania go home show.
But as we said on the Raw one, we don't really have go home shows anymore. Like go home shows don't exist because we're not in that pay per view mentality. So maybe I just sort of looked at it from a different perspective, because go home shows aren't real anymore. This was just, it's another week of SmackDown, but it was a week that I enjoyed more than last week.
Well, you gave it a Smacktastic, so 4 out of 5. I would give it Ellsworthy.
We literally swapped from last week.
Yeah, yeah. But overall, which one did you prefer, Raw or SmackDown?
Raw.
Yeah, but Raw much more.
Are you going to roast me for just like going straight into Ready Player One thoughts?
Or do you feel
like we're doing some preamble beforehand?
For the after swafters. Yeah. I didn't know there were so many of them. Did you get a lot more correspondence?
I got a lot more correspondence yesterday. Again, people asking questions, which is not what we asked for. But I liked I like seeing the inbox full and just going through it and seeing people's correspondence. It was really nice.
Full?
Well, not full.
You've got quite a large allowance of gigabytes Google Suite.
It did fill up like the terabyte space that we have, but it was quite, you know, it was full. I nearly got off the full page.
Oh, that's good.
You know,
it's a 50?
25.
Oh, mate, you need to change your default settings.
Oh, no, well, you see, because I don't like having an inbox that has more than 5 messages in it. I like to file them away into various different compartments within Google Mail. So I couldn't have anything set to 50 because that would just get out of hand.
I changed this way of thinking a few years ago. Inbox zero is the productivity method for it. And I never realized that an image happens when you clear that inbox.
Really?
Yeah, on Google Mail. Once you file away all the messages, so you've answered everything in the inbox, you get like a nice little picture of a beach.
Wow.
Yeah,
oh,
it's lovely.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe that's what I'll do after we get out of this, this booth. But do you want to do a spoon first?
I'll do a spoon and then we'll do your Ready Player One thoughts. So today's spoon is a grapefruit spoon or an orange spoon. These have tapers to a sharp point or teeth used for citrus fruits and melons.
Wow. Yeah. I had no idea that spoon existed.
Neither did I. Neither did I.
Anyway, hang on. Let me just read that again. With tapers to a sharp point or teeth.
Yeah, because you want to mine the grapefruit.
So it's a spork.
I mean, that's a different thing. So I don't know why you would bring that up. Spork isn't on. Spork's way at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's a different combination of a fork or a knife.
I don't know, man. Like, it tapers off into teeth.
Look, a lot of these are going to be very similar on first appearance, but I'm going to trust Wikipedia here that they've separated them into their own distinct things.
Okay, well, we'll trust Wikipedia. Yeah. Always trust Wikipedia. So, I went to go see Ready Player One. Over the bank holiday weekend, mm-hmm. on the Monday, after getting back from our various adventures, we went to the old cinema and to go see Steven Spielberg's latest movie based off Ernie Klein's best-selling novel, a novel that I am unashamedly a fan of. It's not cool to be a fan of that book anymore, but I am still a fan of it. I've read it several times. I've listened to the audiobook even more. I'm actually re-listening to the audiobook again. I think for all of its flaws, and there are numerous flaws within that book, I think it's a really fun adventure. I think its first half is better than its second, but I think it's a really, really fun adventure.
I would defend most of the Robert Langdon Da Vinci Code style Dan Brown books because of the same reason. Yeah. It's a hell of a romp.
You enjoy a Dan Brown book so much that you miss your connecting stop on a tube and end up going to Ealing Broadway.
It's at that point, I just want to finish it. Like you get sick of Dan Brown about a third of the way through the book, but there are so many mysteries he's set up. I just want to find out what happens now. I don't know. It will get to the point where I stop reading them and just read the spoiler page, like a plot summary. But that was the reason. Yeah, I was so over the book by that point. God, what a bad book. They're all bad books, but I enjoy the first third.
Well, I enjoyed Ready Player One, the book, so I was very intrigued by the film. Love Steven Spielberg. I mean, who doesn't like Steven Spielberg, let's be honest? There was an interesting cast. I like some of the choices they'd made for those characters. And when I was watching the trailers, I was one of those people that was a fan of the book that was like, oh, they've changed a lot, but I'm not going to get worked up by it. I want to see whether or not I think adaptation should be different from the source material. Civil War is a great adaptation because it doesn't just do page for page what Mark Miller did. It takes the Civil War idea and puts it into the MCU. And that's a really clever way of doing adaptation. So, you know, taking the core concept of Ready Player One, putting that into a film, I think is grand. But I feel like the film was missing some of what I loved about the book. In that it didn't... Everyone's calling it this really good adventure. And I'm sitting there going like, I thought the book had a much better adventure to it. Not only that, but it feels more complete, and like I think Ernie Klein builds a better world than Spielberg does in the film. I think it's really missing something. It never feels like there's any real jeopardy in there. Some of the character development's a bit weak as well. I mean, it's not great in the book, I'll be honest, but it feels like very rushed on screen. One of the joys of the book is is solving the riddles to find the quest to find the keys and open the gates to find the prize at the end. So, like, that's part of the joy of reading the book and working out these clues along with them. That's not in the film. It's literally just like, here's what the next quest is, and we're doing it. The film literally starts. And not only that, but, like, in the book, it's the guy, Parzival, the lead character, he works out the clue to find the first gate, and then you go off and you do that first gate along with him. In the film, it literally opens just like, some other person already worked out what the first gate is, so now we're all just going to go off and do it. And I'm like, why haven't you done this? Like, you're not a cool hero now. You're just tagging along.
And then they keep saying, it's like, oh man, this guy Parzival, he knows everything there is about Halliday. I'm like, I don't think he does, because he couldn't work out the first thing. And then the second one, I'm pretty sure she basically worked it out for him.
Ah, oh, that's annoying. That's an unconvincing protagonist.
It really isn't unconvincing, and it's a real shame. Because there's stuff in it I really liked. I thought it was a solid 3.5-star movie. And I enjoyed it.
It was fine.
It was fine. It literally was.
That's a different inflection.
Yeah.
So ultimate deletion, it was fine.
It was fine. It was fine.
Look, how it goes there, fine. But Ready Player One, it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
So is that the difference between a 2.5-star and a 3.5-star?
Maybe that's what it is. Although I felt like I thought I had that inflection for Ultimate Deletion. It was fine.
No, it was fine. That was your...
I was never that down on it. No.
It was. It sunk into the ground. How's Ty Sheridan?
He's good. A lot of it's mocap work. But right. I think he works really well within that.
I thought he showed promise as Cyclops.
Yeah.
In that movie.
X-Men.
God, they're still making those movies.
X-Men Apocalypse. No, man, yeah. It's been pushed back now, remember? They've pushed back Dark Phoenix until next year. Because
still means they're making it.
No one cares.
Yeah.
I was never that impressed with Ty Sheridan in those X-Men movies, but that might be because I was impressed by no one in those X-Men movies. Particularly Sophie Turner?
Yep. Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones.
Very bad. But yeah, overall...
I was impressed by Olivia Munn.
Oh,
Olivia Munn.
Overall, I think it's a perfectly fine movie. It's a good 3.5-star film. I did enjoy it, but I can't see myself like wanting to watch it again. Which, now that I'm re-listening to the audiobook read by Will Wheaton, that annoys me even further, because like I really, really wanted to love it. And for all those people who are pissing and moaning about like it being a quote-unquote nostalgia fest, there's barely any nostalgia stuff in there. There's like little bits here and there, but it's not like every scene is just like, oh, by the way, you know what this is? Hey, that's a reference to this, that's a reference to this. It's all stuff that if you know it, like one of the characters carrying a pulse rifle from Alien, if you know what that is, you look at that and go like, oh, that's the pulse rifle from Alien. But the film never goes, oh, hey, by the way, I'm holding the pulse rifle from Alien.
Chock-a-block with Easter eggs, then.
And
those, I would say they're not, like, out-and-out nostalgic. Oh,
I see.
You would have to know what they are.
For a second, what I thought you meant there was chock-a-block was a thing.
No.
Chock-a-block with Easter eggs.
If only. Okay. Well, if people enjoy our film chat in a wrestling podcast, maybe they don't, let Luke know. Luke@WrestleTalk.com. Maybe our review, You Were Never Really Here, the excellent Whackin' Phoenix movie with Lynn Ramsey.
You ain't going to see that?
So good.
Yeah?
So good. But yes, that's all we've got time for today. But Luke usually does the sign off, so.
Yeah, well, we're going to see you tomorrow for our NXT TakeOver New Orleans predictions. We'll see you again on Friday for our WrestleMania 34 predictions. We'll then see you on Sunday for our NXT TakeOver review. We'll see you on Monday for our WrestleMania 34 review. We'll see you on Tuesday for our Raw After Mania review. And we'll see you on Wednesday for our SmackDown After Mania review. But more importantly, we'll see you then. And I love you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.